Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/NSS and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's Wealthfront.com/NSS. And by The Journal, a new monthly email newsletter from Kevin Rose. To gain insider access to Kevin's best of the web, sign up today for free at www.thejournal.email.
All the news from NAB, Growing Plants Without Dirt, and the latest in medtech. Live from the Tweet Brick House in beautiful downtown Petaluma, it's the new Screensavers!
But Chilean wine is better. That is so awesome. Yeah, welcome to the new Screensavers, episode 50, recorded on Saturday, April 23rd, 2016. Leo Laporte.
Megan Maroney.
Hey, Megan Maroney. And that was Maya, a visitor from Peru, which is great. And I didn't know this, but in Peru, apparently, Twit is called Tweet. So that's nice. I like that. Welcome. It's nice to have you. I asked them, I said, which has better food, Peru or Chile? And you said Peru. Mm. And in fact, that's true, because when I was in Chile, they said, don't eat the Chilean food. Eat the Peruvian food. It's much, much better. And then we went to Cusco, and we went to, we saw Machu Picchu, and you have a beautiful country. Mm-hmm. It's a little high.
I have also been to Peru on a high school trip.
Wow, fun.
Yeah,
it
was great.
It's nice when you get beautiful to Cusco, because it's like 8,000 feet or something, they give you coca leaf tea, and they say it'll make you feel better. It does.
It's excellent.
It's excellent. Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's good to see you. I can't believe it. We're coming up on our one-year anniversary. Next week, Martin Sargent joins us. We're going to celebrate the next few episodes by having former Tech TV folks like Megan, like Marty. And then 2 weeks from now, am I right? Episode 52. I'm excited. The return of Kate Botello. We are going to celebrate on the same show our one-year anniversary of the new Screensavers and the 18th anniversary of the old Screensavers.
That's amazing.
I haven't seen Kate in 18 years.
She's going to be here or
she's,
here?
She's going to be here. We're flying her here. And she's going to look at me and say, who's that old man? Bring me Leo. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. Anyway, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
So you were at NAB.
I was at NAB.
Great job. You and Jason did TNT every day, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
It was fun.
Lots of interviews.
I loved all the people I met. Got to see some old friends, old Twit friends, Eileen Rivera, Colleen, who set up your whole video. Got to hang out with her. And
Colleen Goldstein. Our Colleen.
No, Colleen Kelly.
Colleen Kelly, the old Colleen.
Yes, got to hang out with some of her video people, which was amazing.
She's at Facebook now.
She is doing Facebook.
She was our first engineer.
Yes, and Colleen Goldstein, who ran the show.
Oh, she's so good.
She took no prisoners.
Our newest
hire. She slapped everyone around. You got to be careful.
She's got her eye on you.
She runs a tight ship.
But as she should. Mm-hmm. She did a great job. And we thank the folks at LiveU. We were in their booth and streaming the whole show via LiveU, which is amazing, using 4G and LTE technology. Here we go. Here's the picture. Cutest picture. I had already left, but there's Karsten from the right to the left. Karsten, Colleen, Father Robert, some woman I'm not sure of, and then, no, that's Megan, and then Brian Burnett, our technical director in the back row, Jason Howell, John Slanina, our studio manager, and Russell Tammany, our technology guy.
And those are the LiveU folks. I took that photo
Ronan
with my Apple Watch.
And Avi and the whole LiveU gang, they were really nice. You took that with your Apple Watch,
nobody,
so nobody's looking.
Nobody knew that I was taking it except me.
I love your tweet.
That's my favorite photo.
I love your tweet, because you're the only one looking at the camera, because you're the only one who knows
right.
You're taking a picture.
I can't get Twitter on my Apple Watch, but I can take secret pictures. So
what was your takeaway? I'll tell you what mine was.
Okay.
I was very impressed with Blackmagic. Again, great stuff, including that new Ursa camera. Mm-hmm. Really impressive. We saw a lot of 360-degree cameras. Mm-hmm. The Ozo, which is Nokia's $60,000 camera. My favorite, though, And we'll see a little bit more of it later on is the new GoPro camera based on the GoPro Heroes. I think they have six of them in a ball, and that looked really good and a lot less expensive. That's only $6,000.
You know, and it's only like $1,500 if you already have six
GoPros. Right, you can use your own.
Sitting around.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think it's exciting. I think so. What did you see? Anything interesting?
I saw a lot of interesting things. I liked the Muverio from Epson goggles. Have you seen those? They look a little bit like, they're not brand new. They do have a new one coming out. They look a little bit like Google Glass, but what I loved about them, they're AR, augmented reality, but they're for very specific purposes. Like they're for camera operators or they're for drone operators. So you can see what you're looking at and see your drone at the same time. And it was one of those moments where Daryl, who was our camera guy, like he picked it up and you could just see him lighting up. Yeah. It was like, this is amazing, because otherwise you're carrying a camera around. You got to make sure you're not knocking into
people. Well, imagine him using a Steadicam, wearing these glasses. He'd know exactly what he's getting, but he still could see the room that he's in. Brilliant.
Right. And
Brilliant.
I liked that it was just for a very specific market. It's like we think, everybody has to look cool in these, but maybe they're just useful for very specific things. And that's sort of what Epson's doing.
Well, of course, speaking of drones, there were a lot of drones all over the place. Yeah. It was like the drone show. I'm a little over drones. One of the big stories this week, at Heathrow Airport, a pilot says he was hit by a drone and then landed. They're still trying to find the drone. Apparently, there's some thought that it might not have been a drone, but instead was just a plastic bag.
The quote, like, the plastic bag or something. Yeah. That's what they... But the guy who said it is very pro-UAV, the Minister of Transportation, I guess, and that's great. And pilots have to report that they see things. It was the police that tweeted it that was the problem, and every news place that picked it up and saying a drone hit a plane.
And I was listening to an interview on the BBC after this, in which they talked to a drone expert, and the reporter quite rightly said, well, what's the difference between a drone and a remote control aircraft? We've had those for years. Mm-hmm. He said, well, those drone pilots are hoodlums. You know, I mean, that's really what it is. And it's a drone is a remote control vehicle.
Yeah.
Same problems, same rules. I think it's a little overblown.
Don't you think it comes down to privacy? Like, people are ultimately afraid that things are spying on them that they don't understand?
I think it comes down to don't understand. I think that's the most important part. When there's new technologies, people are scared of them.
Yes.
They were scared of locomotives when they first appeared. Mm-hmm. And then we get used to it, and then we move on. And I think that we see this an awful lot. You know, people are scared of the new stuff because they don't know exactly how it works and whether they should be worried about it. Don't worry. It's not going to hurt.
They should be afraid of plastic bags, apparently.
You know, it's important to keep up with what's happening. 11 years ago, Intel came really close to making the processor for the new iPhone. They declined. They said, there's not going to be much of a market in these mobile processors. 11 years later, they fired 12,000 employees, or plan to. They announced they plan to. Their stock is down. Their company is in trouble because mobile is taken over. Mm-hmm. This is a Vox article. It said, Intel made a huge mistake 10 years ago. Now 12,000 workers are paying the price. I don't know if that's fair. I mean, markets change. Intel still owns the desktop market. But it does not own the smartphone and mobile market, and it may never at this point, because low-power chips like those ARM-based chips that drive almost everything completely dominate the market.
And what about the PC market? I mean, I feel like we've been hearing for a long time that it's going... I mean, is this
it's
for real?
Shrinking. I don't think PCs are going away. I think people just aren't buying new ones. The PC you bought a few years ago is just as good, really. It's not that nothing has really changed. Intel hasn't made much faster processors. Instead, they've focused on things like using less power, things like Thunderbolt 3, USB-C. Nice, but not transformational. Not enough for people to scrap their old technology. And I think that's a lot of the reason why PC sales have dropped. It's saturated the market, just like iPads. It's saturated the market. And the one you have from 4 years ago, 5 years ago, works just fine.
Yeah.
It's the new reality. It's a mature market. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Intel will kind of rejigger itself. It won't plan on the kind of growth it had before, but they'll be around. We need them. They make the chips. I'm hopeful that AMD can use this as an opportunity to come back. You know, this is an opportunity. AMD's got to come up with a chip that's as good as the Intel chips. They've been struggling the last few years. I feel like they're on death's door. Let's get AMD up and running, shall we? Be nice to have some competition. What were some of the other big stories we were planning on talking
about? There was one big story, and I'm wearing my colors today. Prince, a sad story. Of course, Prince passed away, Prince Rogers Nelson. He was only 57 years old. And I thought I wanted to bring this up because I think he has such a fascinating relationship to the internet and his music.
It was kind of a love-hate relationship.
Well, right. Like, well, he was against the record companies, right?
Right.
Like, they were big. He
That's
wanted
why
to
he
hold...
changed his name. He yes. said the artist formerly named Prince, why he had the slave logo on his cheek. He felt that and he was right, by the way. The
yes.
record industries were abusing artists. They were treating them like slaves.
And he owned all his master copyrights. He was very very protective of that. But then I think he took that feeling into the internet and sort of distrusted the internet in the beginning as well. He did some things in the beginning, like he sort of kickstarted an album 20 years ago, like it
right.
wasn't Kickstarter, but then he became suspicious and he did some weird copyright things. You know, there was the dancing baby, like dancing in her living room to Let's Go Crazy that a mom
down.
And her baby put up on YouTube, just
yeah.
dancing in the living room. And then, yeah, he went after this family and, you know, said, you can't play my music, that's my music, when all of us were just thinking, well, it's just playing in the background on horrible speakers. The entertainment is the baby, really. So I think slowly in his career, most recently, he was coming around to the idea of streaming, and it's sad. I mean, sad that he passed away, sad we won't have any more of his music, and sad that he didn't fully evolve into what's the future of music.
I'm very grateful, actually, that right before his death, he, just a few days before his death, he said it's okay to play that video. What was the video from a couple of years ago? He's in a club playing a cover. I can't remember it off the top of my head, but it's an amazing performance. And that's one of the things that did happen.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did you see all these tributes on Twitter, and by the way, that's where I learned about it. It was
yes.
on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
probably like most people. Mm-hmm. Immediately, the outpouring on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, and then so many great YouTube videos. And here it is. This is the video that, for a while, actually, this is When Doves Cry, isn't it? No, this is it. This is another one. This isn't the one I was thinking of. Prince's guitar solo in this, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, the George Harrison song. You see, he's on stage with some of the best guitar players in the world, including Tom Petty. But he just burnt it up. So the internet, in many ways, is going to be his legacy. This
mm-hmm.
is where people are going to learn about his music. This is how people are going to find out about Prince. They're going to appreciate what Prince is capable of. So whatever his personal relationship was to the internet, in a way I'm very grateful to the internet, because on the day he died, we were able to really celebrate his music.
Well, that was what's so interesting. You see on Twitter and you see all these people saying, like, you know, Prince was my favorite artist of all time. And then you see another tweet. It's like, why can't I find his music on...
His performance at Coachella in 2008 of Creep, which is Radiohead's mm-hmm. biggest hit, was banned. He pulled it.
Yeah.
And just a few days before his passing, he said, okay, put that video back up.
Right, he was coming around.
And thank goodness.
Yeah.
This is an amazing performance.
But I thought it was really interesting because people were saying, like, why can't I find his music on Spotify? And my first thought was, well, you know, if you were really a fan, you would probably know that he didn't want his music on Spotify. He was only on Tidal. And immediately people started streaming his music, which was what for a long time he didn't want them to do, which was also an interesting moment. But I think for me personally, I wasn't a Prince fan recently, not in like the last decade probably. I appreciate that he has beautiful music, but it really took me back to my youth, to my 11-year-old self who listened and loved that music, and that was why I felt so sad. But yeah.
We'll see, because the it's going to be up to the executors of his estate at this point. He left no children or heirs, but there are, it is thought, thousands of unreleased tracks at Paisley Park that he recorded. Mm-hmm. He lived in his studio, and that no one's ever heard of. And it seems to me that this is exactly what the internet was made for. You know, the Grateful Dead, the same situation where they have many, many hours of recordings of concerts, and they're slowly, you know, packaging them up, mixing them, and putting them out on the internet. And I think that that's the opportunity for Prince's
yeah.
estate as well. I hope that they do that.
Yeah.
Hey, one little note. We had them on. Remember, they scanned our ears for wearables with using an amazing new technology. They didn't require an audiologist to put molds in. The eFit folks are now back on Kickstarter, and this is what I was excited about. This is what I'm waiting for. But I would caution you, I'm always nervous about Kickstarter. It might be better to wait, unless you really want to support what eFit and United Sciences are up to. This is a wearable earbud that will have biometric sensing, brain sensing. Of course, it'll be Bluetooth. It does activity tracking and sleep tracking because it's in your ear. And they were talking about this when they visited. It is able to measure things that a wristwatch just can't measure. And so I'm very hopeful on this. I would caution anybody, I am the poster boy for this, to be skeptical of claims on Kickstarter. This is early days yet, but this may well be the beginning of, I think, what's going to be an exciting revolution. I call hearables, and this is one of the very first. They also call it hearables. All right. I think it's time for a call for help. You want to do it?
I do.
All right. Jalal. Here we go to Homestead, Florida. Hey, Jalal.
How you guys doing?
I'm great. You. It says here you're a kindergarten teacher?
Yes, I am.
Well, that's great. What can we do for you?
I really was jealous of your Minecraft server, and I would like to set one
Who
up.
Who is it? Everybody is.
For my students.
Wait a minute. For your kindergartners?
Yes.
Do they play Minecraft?
I thought they didn't, but then I saw a few of them grab their parents' phone, and first thing they did was get on Minecraft.
Yeah, five years old, I think. I mean, and younger probably every day, yeah.
Really?
So, well, yeah, they were playing it better than I can.
I'm all for it. I think of it as Legos. It's digital Legos, and it's about building. I think it's a great idea for you to run a private server just for your kids for, you know, safety. But also you can turn on settings like you can make it creative mode only. There can be, you know, so there's no battling. There's no violence in there. You can give them all sorts of nice features. You can constrain the environment. And eventually, if you run your own server, you can get them programming in Python. So you may remember I interviewed Craig Richardson. He has a wonderful book on Learn to Program in Minecraft. Highly recommend that. He talks about setting up a server. Here's where I would start with. This, $35. It's a Raspberry Pi. In fact, this is the first. That didn't work at all, by the way. But nice try.
I'm sorry.
We're both getting over the NAB flu. You may have a computer, in which case this same advice would apply. Setting up a Minecraft server merely requires that you have a computer. You download the server software. You don't have to actually play Minecraft in the server. It's just a server which other people will play Minecraft on. But this is how I got started with a $35 Raspberry Pi. And this web page, this is from Pi My Life Up. It's called Dead Easy Raspberry Pi Minecraft Server Tutorial. It's literally a step-by-step. You're going to learn to download and install a third-party Minecraft server, not the official server, called Spigot. I highly recommend it. Spigot runs on lower quality hardware like this Raspberry Pi. You can get 5 kids into a Raspberry Pi 2. I think a Raspberry Pi 3, you probably could get more in 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 kids. But there's a lot of information in here. And you can just do this as a cooking recipe. I did it last night. I haven't done it in a while. I'm running right now my Minecraft server on an old Mac. Works fine. Old Mac, Windows, Linux box. It's very easy to do. But what I did is I installed it on this. Now, what I'm going to do is hook this up, and I'm going to show you, because Megan and I can actually play this. Raspberry Pis come with an HDMI port. This doesn't matter to the kids, by the way. You're going to put this on the network. So I'm going to plug in Ethernet. It supports Wi-Fi, too. But for a server, if you can get an Ethernet cable, that'll be better. And we're not going to make this a public server. I think the best idea is to make it so that only the kids can play it when they're on the premises. Is that what you want to do, Jalal?
Yes, that would be best. And I was just curious if it needed internet because the school Wi-Fi blocks everything. So I would like it.
It does not.
Okay, perfect.
So you're going to, essentially what you're going to do, let me get the power cable, which is, by the way, just a micro USB cable. There is also a power supply you can get for this thing. But you know, the phone charger that you use is probably enough. I'm going to plug in my USB keyboard and mouse. Not that I'm going to need it, because as this boots up, in fact, you could show the screen as it's booting up. You'll see it's going to boot into Linux. And I set this up using this recipe at Pi My Life Up to just boot right into Minecraft. So once you connect this up, you've got a Minecraft server running in your house. It's running on Raspbian, which is the version of Linux that is made specifically for the Raspberry Pi. Now that it's booted up, you should see our server. And this is what your kids will do. And they can get in there. And it's really, it's in creative mode if you want. I mean, you don't have to be. I would recommend, as they do, an 8-gigabyte card. I actually, I think I put a 32-gigabyte micro SD card in there. They're not very expensive. You're going to download onto your computer something called Noobs, which is the startup operating system for a Raspberry Pi, N-O-O-B-S. You download it, and you put it on the micro SD card from your computer, and then you put that micro SD card in the Raspberry Pi and boot up. And it'll say, oh, it'll boot up, and it'll say, oh, what operating system? You're going to choose Raspbian, which is a specialized version of the Linux operating system, Debian, for the Raspberry Pi. You install that. There we go. Now it's booting up. It does go through this process of downloading Java. You don't need to do that anymore. The new version of Raspbian has Java built into it, OpenJDK. And then you will download something called Build Tools. And Build Tools is really cool. This is the Spigot Minecraft server. Build Tools actually builds the whole server from scratch. It downloads it. There you go. You are actually running that on the Raspberry Pi. Let me go into mine, too. And once you install the Build Tools, it's actually not much more than that. You'll do a little bit of configuration, and you'll have Minecraft running. And the kids can play it. And as you said, five kids, right? Six kids at a time?
Yeah, about five.
This is the old Raspberry Pi 2, and it's not a problem for it to have five people in here. Both Megan and I are in it simultaneously. You wouldn't think, frankly, that you could do this with such a $35 computer, but you absolutely can. And I don't know. There's Megan.
Yeah, I'm there.
Why are you staring at that tree? Oh, you're cutting down a tree. Megan's called Milo. I don't know why.
Yes, but I am.
As you can see, we're both in there together, as your kids will be. And this is a beautiful world. Look at it. We actually have kind of an interesting world with rivers and mountains and all sorts of stuff. I think you're going to really enjoy it. Highly recommend it. Have you ever used Linux before?
I actually, a month ago, I bought my first Raspberry Pi.
Oh, so you're set, dude.
That's my first experience with it.
It's a great way to run a Minecraft server. You don't need a fancy computer to do it. There's not that much necessary to do that. So I think that now that Meg and I are playing, the show is now over.
Do we have to do the rest of the show?
No. Isn't this fun? Excellent. Now, don't you love Minecraft? I think it's really fun. Have you played it much, Jalal, at all? I mean, are you new to Minecraft?
I'm new to Minecraft. When I first got the Raspberry Pi, I set it up and I went through their Minecraft version.
They have a kind of primitive version on there. That's right.
Yes. Yeah.
But the advantage of that version is free, which is really nice. You know, this is one negative I'll have to mention. Is you're going to have to buy a copy of Minecraft for every kid that's playing. And so that's about $30, right?
Okay.
The one that comes on the Raspberry Pi is free, but it's not very good. It's a kind of a simplified version of Raspberry Pi.
Well, do you think Minecraft EDU and they have cheaper versions for classes?
Yeah, you might look at that. I don't know if this server is compatible or not with Minecraft EDU. It certainly runs with the generic Minecraft. And as you build it, it will be the most recent version of Minecraft, in this case 1.9.2. You may have to update it if new version comes out, or set up the kids with an older profile that uses the older version. It is dead simple. Okay, I mean, that's the other thing. If you've not played it before, by the way, kill three sheep and a couple of trees so you can make a bed and build a little house before night falls. They're nice sheep, but you got to teach the kids they're going to be playing in creative mode.
They can't blow up any cows.
Yeah. In fact, change the game mode to creative mode, and then I can fly, I can build stuff, you get unlimited resources. It's a lot of fun. I'm actually totally sold in the educational value of Minecraft, right?
I am as well.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not hard. Again, the place to go, and this is how I learned. In fact, I built it on a Pi first and ran it for a little while, and then I thought, I want to try it on a big computer. Where do I have? Oh, my old Mac Pro is just a doorstop right now. So I put it on the Mac Pro, and it's really great. I mean, I put all sorts of extensions and stuff. That's one thing you won't be able to do is add a whole bunch of extra little doohickeys on this. It's just going to be pure Minecraft. But I think that's fine for kindergartners.
For sure.
Yeah.
Hey, that's great, Jalal.
Well,
good for you.
When you get it set up, you send us photos.
For sure.
But again,
thank you so much.
You're welcome, and that's important. Because I put it on this network, if you don't open a hole in the router, and since the school has the router, you won't be able to. If you don't port forward the router to the Minecraft port, nobody will be able to get into your server. So it's just going to be the people who are on your local area network, on the Wi-Fi at the school. That's it. And if the school's blocking out inbound packets, they may have something that's blocking Minecraft traffic on there. I doubt they do. That's kind of more sophisticated. But you might want to talk to the administrators, make sure it's okay with them.
Okay.
Just local Minecraft. All right, Jalal?
Thank you very much.
It's really fun. Yeah. $35 pie, nothing to it. It's the simplest thing in the world. Hey, Martin Sargent next week, if you've got a question for him or a question for me or anybody on the team, here's how you ask.
Need tech help? The new Screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
Actually, as long as we're talking Linux, we'll talk a little more Linux because the new long-term version of Ubuntu just came out. And I want to show people how easy it is to take an old laptop or desktop computer and install Linux on it. It's very straightforward. And I think Linux has come far enough. It's a free operating system, very powerful, very secure. It's come far enough now that almost anybody can do it. So we'll talk about that in a second. But first, a word from Wealthfront. Now, if you are saving money for a rainy day, the kids' college fund, your retirement, long-term savings, you're faced with a little issue. How do you invest for the long term? I'll tell you, after doing a lot of research and reading, I thought I could do it myself. But the key is, every quarter, at least, you need to go in and rebalance, reassess what you're invested in, move money around a little bit. You have to pay attention. So a lot of people, like me, said they would do it. 5 years later, I thought, oh, I wonder how my investments were doing. That is not the way to do it. Fine, you're going to hire a professional, right? Well, first of all, there's some question in my mind how smart professionals are. If they were really good, why are they working for a living, right? Second of all, they are going to charge you from 1% to 3% of what you have under investment every year as a management fee. See, that means you have to earn 3% more just to break even. That is not the way to do it. I got a better way. It's Wealthfront. Wealthfront doesn't rebalance once every quarter, once a month, once a week. It's constantly monitoring your investment, rebalancing it, because it's a computer. It is a computer program. It is artificial intelligence based on the best knowledge books. But on their board, Burton Malkiel, he wrote The Random Walk Down Wall Street, and Charles D. Ellis wrote The Winning the Loser's Game. They've got more than 200 years of investment expertise on their advisory board. It's based on Nobel Prize-winning academic research and best practices. And the thing is, because it's constantly watching, it can constantly do things that no human can do, things like tax loss harvesting and rebalancing every minute, making sure that your investment is maximized, you get the best return with the least tax consequences. It really works. Now, I'm not asking you to invest yet. What I want you to do is go to wealthfront.com/NSS, and there's a couple of free things you can do right out of the box. First of all, you'll answer just a handful of questions. They don't go through this big, long questionnaire. Really, just a couple of questions that they've used to pinpoint your time frame, your risk tolerance. They will design a portfolio. That's yours to keep. You can walk away with that, and you can use it to invest. That's a great start. They will also do their portfolio review. So if you tell them, this is how I have it invested, they will tell you what your risks are, how diversified your investments are, and most importantly, what you're losing to fees, and even how you can minimize your taxes. And that's all free as well. So do that. Understand what they're doing. If you want to start investing with them, you can start with as little as $500. But they have a very nice offer for people coming in from the new Screensavers. Your first $15,000 invested at Wealthfront.com is free of charge forever. Not 0.25% a year. That's their normal fee. Zero. So for 0.25% a year, zero for the first $15,000, the best management, you don't have to do anything. You just have to go to wealthfront.com/NSS. Wealthfront.com/NSS. Please take advantage of this. At least go there and get the portfolio review and read up on what they're doing, because I think it's really, really impressive. Hey, good news. If you go to Ubuntu.com, U-B-U-N-T-U, this is one of the most popular, if not the most popular, Linux downloads. Linux is a free operating system created by Finnish graduate student Linus Torvalds in the early 90s. He gave it away. He said, I'm going to keep the trademark, but I'm not going to patent it. I'm not going to trademark it. And, you know, I bet at this point he kind of wishes he had, because Linux is running everything. It's running many of the internet sites you visit. Linux is the software behind all Android devices, all Chrome OS devices. It is a robust, mature operating system that'll let you do everything you want, and it doesn't cost you anything. If you go to Ubuntu.com, you'll see that this says 16.04 LTS is here. For most people, LTS is the version of Linux you want to use. I've tried. There are other kinds of releases. There's things called rolling releases and bleeding edge releases where you get the latest software, but you might have to put up with some hobbyist problems. And this is one of the reasons I think Linux gets a bad name is people use those releases or they use a Linux that is not stable and they get problems. Things stop working. They have to spend time tweaking it. Ubuntu really has the advantage of having been around for a long time. Mark Shuttleworth, the .com millionaire who put his money into it, has really done a great job. I stopped using Ubuntu a few years ago because they had really commercialized it with Ubuntu One and they started promoting stuff and they've backed off. They've really backed off. And now Ubuntu is just easy to install, has the best support for the widest variety of hardware. It's the closest analog to a commercial operating system that's absolutely free. So if you've been thinking about Linux, it is really easy to install. You're going to get one of these USB keys. I should install it. We used to do that on the screensavers all the time. You're going to take a USB key. You're going to go to Ubuntu and download it. Just download the stock version. They have other versions, though, for low-power hardware, for, they have an Edubuntu. In fact, why don't I look at the versions? I'll just show you real quickly because this is kind of fun. Learn more about Ubuntu. I think that's where I go. The long-term support release is nice because they don't update it very often. They just keep it secure. And that is really great. You don't have to worry about tweaking it. It comes with OpenOffice, which is a free, compatible with Microsoft Office experience. You can put Chrome on it via the Chromium project, which I recommend. You can use everything you use, really, on your Windows machine. And I really like that. Again, choose the version that you like. There are a variety of them. I think for most people, 16.04 of standard Ubuntu is fine. But you'll see they have a variety of other versions as well. They have educational versions. They have a version which is kind of fun for media creation types with audio editing in it and a variety of other software so that for video and stuff. There's a media version. They have a Chinese version, Kailin. They've really done a great job. Anyway, you download it, you put it on a USB stick, and for almost all hardware, if you just put the USB stick in, you may have to turn off Secure Boot on modern Windows hardware. Unfortunately, they use Secure Boot. You'll have to go in the BIOS, turn on Legacy Booting. I'm going to reboot this machine, and I can just start the install right now. What do you say?
Go for it.
I think before the show is over, we will have a completely updated Ubuntu machine. This is a late model Dell. I think it came out in 2015. And so it's a little bit of an expensive machine that was designed to run Windows. But one of the things that's cool about Dell is they have done really well supporting Ubuntu. In fact, they ship machines with Ubuntu on it. And so as a result, you're going to have a very easy time getting this to work. You're going to go into BIOS, boot to the USB key. Again, turn off Secure Boot, turn on Legacy Boot, boot to the USB key. So I'm going to choose my USB storage device here. And this is a USB drive that I put the Ubuntu ISO on. Now, you'll need to use some special software to do that. Ubuntu explains very clearly how to put it on here so that it's a bootable disk. You can't just copy the ISO off. I'm going to boot into it. And I don't know if you remember the days when we installed Linux in the past, but it was a little bit more tricky than it is now. This is what we call a live CD or a live USB key. That means the first thing that's going to happen is Ubuntu is actually going to run off of the drive in a way that I can see if all my hardware works. So your choice will be to try Ubuntu, and you could do that if you want to make sure your camera works and your internet works and all of the hardware, and that you should check that works to verify it. That's a good idea. But if you know that it'll work, and I know it will, I'm going to now install Ubuntu on this machine. And I'm going to show you real quickly. We can just walk through this. I usually check this box. This makes sure that if you have proprietary Wi-Fi hardware or graphics cards, that those will be installed. And that's something that they do just to make sure that you don't want the traditional free version from the Free Software Foundation. You're willing to put proprietary software on here. And in this case, I would do it because modern laptops often have to have some special proprietary drivers for the Intel chips or the Wi-Fi cards. In this case, it's a Broadcom card, and it does need a special driver. So it's going to actually check the hardware, see what it needs, start copying over. We're going to let it run, and I will walk you. Well, actually, I can do one more step here, and this is another one I want to encourage you to do. You can encrypt the installation, which means the hard drive will be encrypted. That means no one without that password can look at what's on your hard drive. Good idea, right?
Yes.
Does not slow it down at all. And also, I recommend you use the Logical Volume Manager, or LVM. That sets it all up. That's all you have to do. Just check those two boxes. It's going to ask me for a security key. Hide your eyes, Megan. I don't want anybody to know. This is the key that will unlock my hard drive. You will have to enter it each time you reboot the machine. And that's a good thing, okay? I'm not going to have it overwrite empty disk space because that takes too long, but it's probably a good idea if you've used this computer before and there's any personal data on it that it wipes the drive. This is all nice that this is built in. And then encrypts it, and it's going to keep it completely safe. And then to continue, make sure I'm going to repartition the hard drive. I'm going to erase everything that's existing on here. Choose my locale, which is West Coast. I think it's going to ask me then what keyboard. Yep. Is it an English U.S. keyboard? Yep. And then I'm going to tell it my login. Now, remember, we tell people this all the time. Don't run as root. You want to create a separate account that is not your root account. So I'm going to say my name is Leo Laporte, and this is my 2015. I mean, you can name this anything you want, but I always name it what the hardware is. And I'm going to put a password on here. This is my login password. You don't have to have a login. It can log in automatically. I recommend you do for security. And then I always encrypt my home folder separately as well. That's a good idea. Now this is going to be a secure machine that nobody can get onto without me giving them the password to. And I love it when encryption is this easy. You never have to worry about that again. It's going to start copying files over. And before the show is over, I'll have a running copy of Ubuntu on this laptop. Great way to revitalize old hardware to make a more secure system. And whenever these long-term versions come out, the LTS versions, that's the time to jump on it. You're going to have the latest software. It's all been tested thoroughly, so it's as bug-free as possible. They will patch it automatically, just as Windows does and Apple does automatic downloads. But this is going to be a version of Ubuntu that is rock solid. And I really, really like this. It's been extensively tested. So let's let that run.
I'm so glad you showed that, because a lot of times when people say this is so easy.
Did you see how easy that was?
It was very easy. Do you want a little blast from the past?
Yeah.
I just looked this up. January 18th, 2002, I installed Mandrake.
Yes.
Linux. I used a CD-ROM. You remember those?
Yes.
Yeah, on the
screensavers. We were famous, the screensavers. Yeah. We installed Linux in year one, year two. We installed it more times on live television than everybody had done it before. And I thought, we haven't done that in a long time.
Yeah, and it's different.
It's so much easier. I mean, I'm literally done. It is now installing. The next thing we see, I will log in, and it'll be about 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Doesn't take very long. Mm-hmm. And this will now be a Linux box. And in my opinion, I'll be honest, frankly, every bit as good, I think, as OS X or Windows. I mean, I really think they've come a long way. I know people make jokes about Linux for the desktop. What is this the year for Linux and the desktop? I think it is. I think every year is. And especially with the issues people have been having with Microsoft kind of forcing Windows 10 on them, the privacy concerns people have. I have to say, more and more, I've been using Linux. And you can run your own Minecraft server on it as well. All right. We were at the NAB show in Las Vegas. You remember we were talking about that? Brian Burnett got to go down there. He was our TriCaster switcher, as he is today. He was all week long. But he also got a little time to wander the show floor. And I know you're a GoPro fan, Brian. He took a look at the new 360-degree GoPro camera. Take a look.
Brian Burnett here at NAB from the Live View booth for Twit. And the most interesting thing I saw here at NAB... Well, you know, I'm kind of an action cam guy, so GoPro would probably be the one I'd go with. They were showing off their new GoPro Omni. This is a six-camera configuration that's used for none other than VR, 360 video, and it shoots it all in 4K. It's not cheap. It's $4,999, but from what I saw, you can shoot 360 video, stream it live, and if I could have one to play with, it would make me so happy. So definitely check that out. That was my favorite thing from NAB. Back to you.
Thank you, Brian Burnett. Are you going to get one? It's only $6,000. I think you should...
Are you going to get him one?
No.
I was kind of hoping we get one for testing.
I want to, the new studio, we're building a new studio. It's only $500,000. That means we'll have a few bucks left over. Mm-hmm. But I would very much, as we design it, we're really thinking about it being a 360-degree studio. So I really think we will need one of these. We just have to figure out what's the best bang for your buck.
Can we get that instead of the Ozo?
The Ozo... I think it's too expensive. It's
$60,000. Did you hear Lisa? She said no. She said no.
I don't hear you. The Ozo is $60,000, and it doesn't do live. The GoPro doesn't do live yet either.
Not yet, but they were teasing that they will be. So
that's the one thing. I want to wait till it's live, right? The Ozo, Alex Lindsay tells us for every minute of video you have to render it for 4 hours. So that's not only not live, that's for ridiculous, and it's $60,000, so that's definitely not in the picture. We're going to look at the GoPro, and I think there will be other models along. And I would love to do live 360-degree streaming. I think it'd be fun. Then you can look at what you want to look at.
Yeah, it's the future.
Old pal Gary Koffler is here. He is a great friend of the network, a living legend. You have been in so many tech companies, but you've got a new venture. It's called Aquaponics. Gary is the aquaponics evangelist for School Grown Incorporated. They make, we took a look. So let's go out right now to Felton, California, and the School Grown Leaf Greenhouse at San Lorenzo Valley High School.
So we're at the San Lorenzo Valley High School Greenhouse, and this is a leaf greenhouse, which stands for Living Ecosystem Aquaponic Facility. And it's an aquaponic garden that we have some pretty good production out of, and the produce every single week then gets sent to the local school families. And when they come to pick up their kids, they grab a box of their produce as well and go home with some fresh produce every single week of the year. So this works by a system called aquaponics, which is a combination of aquaculture and hydroponic farming. And aquaculture, of course, is just raising fish in tanks and ponds and captivity, that sort of thing. And hydroponics is a soilless production of plants. And most aquaculture facilities, they, of course, have to dump their water because it accumulates the products of fish waste, which in this case happens to be ammonia, which ultimately convert to nitrate. And nitrate is toxic to water systems, but it just so happens to be plant fertilizer. So when you marry those two systems together between aquaculture and aquaponics, then you have plants growing in fish waste fertilizer. And of course, the plants then use up the nutrition, they pull the nitrates and all the other things that the plants need, and they return purified water back to the fish. So the water stays in an aquaponic system for a very long time, if not forever. It's a closed loop, or a nearly closed loop system, where the ecology supports one another, and the water is just the medium that transfers nutrients back and forth. Well, aquaponics can be very small, from little tabletop-sized system on up to big commercial farms. Here, we have a temporary tank, but it will have 6 250-gallon tanks for this particular system, each tank holding about 100 pounds of fish load or so. The total system volume, I believe, is 5,000 or 6,000 gallons. But it's once you fill up that 5,000 or 6,000 gallons, it only takes enough each day to add to it for whatever evaporation takes place and the weight of the water that's in the plants and the fish themselves. We could probably go for half of a year with no water at all. And if it just rains every now and then, we can even gather all our own water from rainwater collection.
So we'll be supplying the solar power for this leaf greenhouse. Our company makes a solar panel that you can grow plants underneath. It's a semi-transparent material. It does two things. It creates electricity with standard silicon solar that you would see on an everyday black panel on your roof. And then it also alters the spectrum of light to be more efficient for photosynthesis. So plants like red light and they like blue light. And so our panel gives them extra red light, more than you'd see in the regular light spectrum. We also take away the green light, and that is because plants don't like green light. They're green because they are reflecting the green light away. So the black strips on this panel are the same material that you see in everyday solar panels. But we dice it up and distribute it throughout the panel so that we're letting enough light through for the plants to grow.
The kids do everything up here, you know, from, you know, planting seeds, pulling weeds, feeding fish. They raise their own fish. They raise their own plants. They build their own systems. They build their own biofilters. They build everything. So it's exciting, you know, for me to see them, you know, create something on paper or on computers and then actually follow through and build it. And for a lot of kids, it's the first time they've ever gotten that opportunity to really be in charge of their own projects up here. So it really builds a lot of confidence. And it's just, I think it's a good way to spend your day. And I, you know, ideally with, you know, the way that education is changing now, where the nation is trying to get kids more into problem solving and learning by doing, you know, we've been doing that here for a long time.
It's just a simple Raspberry Pi computer, basically just a small computer, and it's hooked up to a temperature probe up here. Every 10 minutes between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m., it checks the temperature. Depending on the readout, it will send a signal to this relay, which opens and closes the vent at the top of the greenhouse. Teacher told me about the availability of a project, and I was sort of struggling with what to do because I didn't really have any like practical applications for a Raspberry Pi or anything like that. This project offered an opportunity that was a little different from everything everybody else was working on, so that was something that I was interested in. I did a lot of the programming myself and had to learn Python to do it, which it's a pretty simple language to pick up on. In the future, we're planning on maybe putting in humidity or light controls for the greenhouse so that there's more automation overall. But that all depends on what they need and what I can figure out.
So this whole greenhouse is designed to catch all its own water, to generate all of its own electricity. So this is a very sustainable project. That's what we're trying to do. We're here at schools, not so much to sell aquaponics, but to teach sustainability and to teach the new upcoming generation of kids that what they do on this planet has a cyclical action. It's not, I'm hungry, let's get food, and we don't care what happens along the side. We're going to come right back around. All the systems on Earth, the water cycle, the nitrogen cycle, the carbon cycle, all those work in cycles. And food and humans should be part of that cycle. And that's what sustainability is.
Isn't that awesome? That kid, by the way, Ian Gallagher, was student of the week.
Yes, he was.
That week.
Yes, he was.
I've had the lettuce. I don't know if it's from that farm.
It is.
It's really good. Yeah. I mean, I think people think, oh, fish poop. You always have fertilizer of some kind.
Coming out of the back of a cattle or a horse.
Yeah, something. And it's delicious. And what is so neat is this closed system.
Mm-hmm. It's been around for about 1,000 years. Chinese have been doing it that long.
Yeah. What kind of fish?
We're raising white sturgeon, catfish, perch.
Do people eat the fish ever? Or?
They do, but you can't eat too many of them at a time because they're purifying the water for the plants,
right.
And
you
the
need
plants
them.
Need to grow from the fish waste. Yeah.
So you've been, like Leo said, in this world that we've been traveling in. You worked on Deja Vu, like for the Mac, some of my favorite products. What got you from there to here?
I was working with the Marin County Company doing a VR game console prototype for Hasbro and Milton Bradley, but they didn't think that VR was ever going to amount to anything.
Now, by the way, Mattel, I know when we did that Mattel thing, you said, got to get one of those. Is that kind of like what you were working on?
Very much like that. We were working with Jaron Lanier and his goggles and his glove.
Now they're doing a ViewMaster.
Yes, they are. And then I started working with the same group, started doing things with Expert Systems, and I hooked it up to a fish tank to keep more tilapia alive than you could normally without this Expert System. And now I'm working on what's called an augmented reality, where we're going to put the information about all of these greenhouses that we're building into an application so we can look at the greenhouses and see the different factors that contribute to the growth of the fish and the plants.
And you're using Leo's favorite camera, the...
Yeah, I knew Leo was taking his Theta S to Vegas, so we got the rep to give us the Theta S, and we got
some
video here from the inside of the greenhouse.
Oh, look at that. So people can go to the Theta 360 site and look at this. What a great shot. I love that.
Yeah.
What is the production of that? I mean, that looks like a ton of lettuce.
Yeah, well, as we're coming into spring and summer, we're going to be able to feed about 100 families every week. When Johnny and Mary's parents come to pick them up after school, they take home a fresh box of produce. With lettuce, tomatoes, cucumbers, carrots, radishes.
And we talked about doing this at our house How much would it be to get a small one?
This is a CSA, which stands for Community Supported Agriculture, for 13 weeks. It's about $20, $25 a box.
Nice.
And people are sharing it with their neighbors, and they're just wanting to support the program.
That's really great. Mm-hmm. And that box is great. We got one that was really fantastic.
Well, the plants are still alive when they get them. In fact, I've got plants now still
on. Oh, that's why they're
desk.
So fresh.
They are. They were picked just an hours earlier. We keep them refrigerated in the warehouse. And then you can put them inside a Dixie cup with some distilled water, and they keep on growing.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's really interesting talking first about the Minecraft server and saying, you know, it's interesting to be in that world, but then also to have your hands on the technology itself and to be doing things that really affect your daily life at this age. This is amazing.
Yeah, I used to write programs with the programmers that used to work for me, and it would take 18 months to 12 months.
Ian did it in how long?
He did it, but then also the our audience are people that are eating every day, 2-3 times a day.
Right.
So it's...
we all have to.
It's a real... Yeah.
Sometimes four for me.
It's the best project of my life.
I remember you texting me saying, do you think you could use a Raspberry Pi to control heating and cooling of a greenhouse? I said, I'm sure you could. And Ian figured it out very quickly.
Yes, he did.
Did a nice job.
And we're going to add to it, and we're going to add all kinds of capabilities so we can monitor the temperatures, the humidity, the tank pumps, the seed tables, and actually just push these things on an application.
This is also great for a high school curriculum. And they're learning so much from this.
Well, we get the chemistry department in, checking the water conditions. The biology department's taking slides and looking at the microbes we're developing. The photo department's coming in to take pictures. They have an aquaculture program there. So it fits in with the STEM and the core curriculums at the high schools.
Yeah.
So if someone's watching this that's in charge of their school's garden, what should they do to start something like this?
What they should do is they should come to our website, which is schoolgrown.org. And there's a place there where they can make an inquiry. It's also a place there where they can donate because we are a nonprofit.
Right.
And
I imagine this is expensive to build.
It is. But the good news is that part of this was actually paid for by the local community. The lumber yard gave us the lumber, and we got the pipe from one of the pipe companies. So we got a lot of help from the community, and the fire department and the police department were out there to help us building this last July.
That's really neat.
And, of course, there's the solar panels, the photovoltaic.
Photovoltaic panels, which also are light frequency filters, so the plants are getting the light they need. We're getting the shade that we need. And then the electricity gives us a feedback into the system for when we do need to use lights during the winter months.
Is there a lot of electricity consumed? Are there pumps in here?
We have one pump. We're using one air pump to move all that water through
the
system.
Really? That's all you need?
Well, I'm working with John Parr, who was in the picture there. And John, in my opinion, is the Steve Wozniak of aquaponics. And he has been pioneering aquaponic systems for the last 5-6 years, and he's trying to implement all the latest state of the art and teach the kids so the kids can then contribute their ideas as well. This is a very nascent industry, but it's growing very quickly because we're using 90% less water than traditional agriculture, and it's all delicious food.
90% less water.
You've got those sprinklers going out in the fields. We're keeping the water in one place and just using it over and over again.
So it's essentially a sealed system. There's evaporation.
Evaporation, transpiration. We lose a little water when we're packaging up the plants for distribution.
It's really remarkable. Yeah. What a great idea. Schoolgrown.org.
Schoolgrown.org.
For more information. By the way, I should just mention that the Linux was already done before we began this segment, but I'm going to hold on to this and show you the next couple of steps. But that's remember how hard it was to install Linux? It's like trivially easy. It's faster than installing Windows. And this laptop, the touch works. Everything works on that. Gary, I want to thank you so much. Gary is in our chat room as I Do Tech. You'll see him fairly frequently in there. And we've known Gary for ages and ages. And it's just nice to see you doing something really, really cool.
Best work of my life.
Yeah, really fun. Schoolgrown.org. Thank you, Gary. We're going to talk to Scott Jung. You're going to talk. Actually, you talked to Scott Jung a little earlier about some med tech objects, including one I need, how to improve my posture. But first, let me tell you about Kevin Rose's new effort. He's doing the Journal. I'm a subscriber. You're a subscriber. Mm-hmm. You should all be. It's absolutely free if you go to www.thejournal.email. That's the website. Remember Kevin, of course, from the original Screensavers, our dark tipper. Well, he's gone on to great things. Of course, he created Dig. He was the host of Dig Nation with Alex Albrecht, one of the most popular podcasts ever. I know a lot of people miss that show. He then started another company after he sold Dig. He started a company called Milk, where he created new apps, was purchased by Google. He was a venture fellow there. But his newest venture is to take a look at body hacks, and he's got a podcast and videos and style tips, and he tells you about the latest gadgets in this email newsletter. It's Kevin Rose's Best of the Web, at least every month. Actually, most of the newsletters that you see these days are daily or weekly. He's going to send one newsletter a month so that it's like just quick, got everything you need in that one newsletter, so you're not getting your inbox buried. If he recommends a product or service, you know it's because Kevin uses it and loves it as his stamp of approval. He owns many of the products he reviews in the journal and tests them all extensively. He calls it, and I love it, a newsletter for the curious. That's you, right? We know that's you. Leave it to Kevin Rose to find great products, fully tested, to do stories and podcasts. It's essentially a lifestyle magazine for geeks. And he's even got a podcast version now of the journal where he interviews people who are expert in their field. The Journal, a monthly newsletter for the curious by Kevin Rose, and it's free. And you can sign up right now at www.thejournal.email. 42,000 plus members. That's the last time I looked. I think it's more than that. Who have already subscribed. You're always going to find something interesting once a month. That's all. www.thejournal.email. And Kevin, bless his heart, I said, Kevin, I'll plug this like crazy. He said, no, I want to buy ads. I said, all right, well, I'll take your money. But, dude, I owe you. Kevin was one of the original Twits. In fact, I told Kevin and Patrick Norton when we started Twit 11 years ago, we just celebrated our birthday, I said, you want to be partners? They said, no. But they've both gone on to great things, so. It's okay, but Kevin was one of the first people at Twit, and I'm just so happy and proud of him and his success. Again, www.thejournal.email, okay, not .com, .email, www.thejournal.email. All right, time to move along. Megan, you talked to Scott Jung.
I did.
This was not so long ago, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. About a week ago, and she has some really cool med gadgets for you right now.
So the first one I wanted to show off is called the Lumo Lift. And this is a sensor that has an accelerometer, gyroscopes, and things to basically make sure that you have proper posture. As you know, posture is really an important thing for your overall health. You know, it can lead to back pain if you slouch all the time. And of course, having good posture helps you even look better because you're sitting up straight and you look confident. So this will warn you if you are basically slouching too much.
This is a device. I put it on here. It attaches with a magnet, so there's a magnet on the inside.
Yeah, attached with a magnet. Very small, very discreet, so it can go pretty much anywhere. And I think the best way to show it off is to show...
Should I slouch?
Here. Yeah, so we're going to have you slouch, and then we're going to see
phone... I'm slouchy.
There's going to be a timer that counts down.
Oh, yeah. Wait, did it...
There we go.
Okay, I'm slouching now.
So we're slouching now.
Slouching. My regular posture. Ooh! And then I got, little. That was exciting. It didn't hurt. It wasn't a shock.
Just a vibration.
Yeah. Just a little tickle. It actually felt a little good.
Mm-hmm. Just enough to keep you motivated to sit up straight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Like, it feels like the Apple Watch feedback that you get. So, not, you know, it's not going to kill you. We're not talking about Clockwork Orange or anything.
No, not at all. Not yet.
Okay. Not yet. Okay, good.
Version 2, maybe.
All right. So, the Lumo Lift. Is there a cost on that?
Yeah, it's $79. You could buy it from the Lumo website.
Cool. And it has an app for iOS and Android? Or
Yes, iOS.
And just iOS?
Not sure about Android, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on. What else do you have?
So the next one is called the Propeller Health Sensor. And you can see here, this is just a standard inhaler. And it's an inhaler accessory that fits at the top of the inhaler. And what it's used for is, say, if you need to use your inhaler, you just give it a press. And it actually geolocates where you took your inhaler. It takes information from the internet about the weather conditions, if there's a lot of pollen in the air, and you can also put in what symptoms you had when you needed to use your inhaler, basically to help you figure out like what's triggering asthma and the need to use your inhaler.
That's great. I had three kids that I'm going to still have my kids, but they don't have asthma anymore. But when they did, it was so annoying to know what was causing it. And that's really, like, that's really strong medicine that the doctor recommends for you. And you don't want to overtake it. So it would be great to actually have data that was useful to know when you took it, how often you took it, where, what was triggering it. I love that.
Exactly. Yeah, it'll help you know you should stay indoors or you know, avoid certain types of weather, certain types of environments, which is great.
And now, is that something that insurance would cover?
Yeah, this is available. It's a medical device, so the cost is determined by your insurance, and you get it through your doctor.
So it's the whole inhaler or just the top of the inhaler?
It's just the top part here.
So it goes with, works with your regular inhaler?
Mm-hmm. It just slips right on the top of regular kind of tube inhaler.
That's great.
Yep.
Awesome. What else do we have?
And the last device I wanted to show you, this is called the CircuitCore Ember. This is a device that was just announced this year at CES. And it looks like something you might see at a hospital called a pulse oximeter. But this is actually a fitness device that measures hemoglobin. Hemoglobin is the protein in your blood that carries oxygen. So it essentially will help you determine how much oxygen your body can carry. And fitness users would use this when training for endurance events, running or cycling. Typically what they'll do is they'll go up to high elevations, say Colorado, put this on and train and see their hemoglobin content go up. And they can kind of use their measurements to determine when is the best time to actually do that endurance event. So you can literally, you know, see your hemoglobin change as you change elevations.
Cool.
And it's just a quick 1 minute measurements.
So can we test mine
sure,
now?
Absolutely.
Which finger?
Either finger.
Okay.
And I'll put that in there. Let's turn on the app.
Do I have to stay still?
No need to, thankfully.
How much is this?
So this is going to go for $499. And right now it's available for pre-order and it's going to be shipping very, very soon, sometime in the summer.
So for serious athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yes.
So what's it telling me?
So it's telling me that you have right now 13.6, 13.7 grams per deciliter of hemoglobin. And also your pulse rate is 67.
Oh, so if I were a professional athlete, I probably would know what that meant. Or
exactly.
Whether I could go run 20 miles or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course if it goes up or down with your training regimen.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, so how often do you post on MedGadget?
I try to post once every week. MedGadget has content every day. We post 2-3 times a day. I'll post every once in a while.
And do these devices all have FDA approval before?
Not all of them. This one specifically, the CircuitCore Ember, this is a fitness-related device, so it's not going to go through that FDA process, at least not yet. The Propeller is FDA approved, and the Lumo isn't going to be an FDA approved thing. It's just a personal metric device.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for showing us this stuff, and hopefully you'll come back again with the next new medical gadgets that come out.
Absolutely. I'd be glad to.
All right. Take care.
Scott Jung from MedGadget.com, right?
Yes. And a lot of people in the chat room were asking for the names again. That was the Lumo Lift was the...
Lumo Lift.
The propeller posture. Inhaler sensor.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, the Lumo Lift was the posture device.
And that inhaler
was buzzing. Some people were also saying, it sounds like there's a buzzing because it was right next to my microphone.
I was telling you, sit up.
The propeller inhaler sensor was the thing that you'd use if you had asthma. And the Ember was the last one, the fitness.
And that's
device.
EMBER?
EMBER.
You always have to ask because nowadays everything's spelled weird.
Right. Yeah.
By the way, that's it. It rebooted. I'm in there. I'm actually, Ubuntu has a nice software store. Whoops. I guess I can't move that one around, but notice Touch is working. It has a nice software store. Of course, first thing I do is I go in and install Chrome. And then it does support high DPI displays. This, as you can see, is a very high-resolution display. So I will change the scaling to be high DPI. That'll double it. Everything will be twice as big and much easier to read. But that is remarkable. I mean, this is Linux running on a desktop. And as far as I can tell, I mean, it is a very easy-to-use desktop. All the hardware is working. I'm on the Wi-Fi network. That's Ubuntu, and because it's the LTS version, that's going to be rock solid for at least 2 or 3 years before, and it'll update itself for security updates and so forth. Are you ready for the mailbag?
I don't know, am I?
There it is, the mailbox, and here it is. Happy Easter.
Oh, thank you.
No, I think
so
the Easter bunny
much.
Came and left that. It might be kind of old.
There's butter in here.
It's butter called...
and eggs. Oh, butter and eggs.
Oh, butter and eggs. Butter and eggs.
Butter
Here's
and eggs
for you.
Egg.
Here's for me.
Butter and eggs.
Why don't you start, ladies first?
Okay. Well, this was a tweet that I got from Chester from Maricopa, and he said, I have a question. I have cerebral palsy with a speech impediment. Do you think that the Echo would work for me regardless? So he's talking about the Amazon Echo, which, of course, is a device that you use with your voice. And that was a question that I could not answer myself.
There is training. So if you open the Alexa app, you can train it. I mean, typically Siri and Google Now Well, Siri doesn't require training. Google Now will let you do some training. Mm-hmm. But the Alexa app does let you read a bunch of stuff, which I think helps it better with accents and things like that. But does it work with for somebody with CP?
Well, yeah. So I didn't know the answer, so I went where anyone would go, Reddit. And I did some searching, and I found Sam Megkin. He does a lot of different hacks with the Echo. He has, like, created an Echo for $10 and just plays around. He's a fan of the show. I did not know that until I emailed him. But he has a web application for the Echo that you can test. There's his site, Sam's site.
So you could see how the Echo would do?
Yeah, so you can
on the web before you buy one.
Right.
Oh, neat.
So I sent that to Chester. I sent that, like, this is what it looks like.
Is it going to his Alexa?
No, it's just they're using the Amazon's API, which they released. That's what Sam's using. And then you can press it. You don't even have to actually say the wake word. And you can speak to it and try it out. And Chester tried it out, and he said 3 out of 5 times it worked.
Nice.
And like we said, it gets better. And he said with Siri, that was not what happened. And with Google Voice activation, he could not get it to ever work.
Amazon has something pretty magical there.
They do. So, yeah.
Now, you got a Dot.
I have a Dot. And
so there's a tap and a Dot and then the old school Echo.
Mm-hmm.
The tap is a battery-powered one that you don't talk to, but you tap before you talk to it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have a wake word. I'm not sure about that, but the Dot I just got my Dot. I love it.
I really like my Dot as well. Did you make different wake words for yours, or are they far enough away that you don't have to do that?
I have, if I say the A word, everything in the house says, what? 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 So the deal with the Dot, the only complaint I have about the Echo is the speaker on it is mm-hmm. not great. And so you can listen to music with it, but it's not, it's not a really nice stereo system. The Dot makes it possible to pair the Echo to good speakers, stereo speakers if you want. Now, suddenly, you can choose any speakers you want. To me, this is a killer app. In fact, it could put companies like Sonos out of business because now you get a bunch of Dots instead of the big, long Echoes, and you pair them up to whatever quality speaker you want to spend money on. I paired it up to some very nice JBL speakers, and that's what we listen to in the bedroom. And it's still good for books and spoken word and commands, but music now sounds so good. I'm really feeling. And now I'm using the Bluetooth pairing.
You can do it
with hardwire, but here's what I like about the Bluetooth. I could put the Echo over here and the speaker over there. And in the past, when the speaker's playing music, it's hard to get the Echo to hear you.
Mm-hmm.
But now that it's over here, I put it by the bed, I can talk to the Echo even if loud music is playing and it responds. So I like having them separate. I also found that, at least for the speakers I was using, they would go to sleep. The speakers would go to sleep if I used the hardware. But with Bluetooth, it always wakes up the speakers, and so the speakers are always on.
Good point.
Yeah.
And the Echo, the Dot is only $100.
It saves you a lot of money.
So that is. I want to get the Tap. I've been thinking about it because I kind of poo-pooed it. I said, this sounds like just somebody's brother had an idea in the boardroom. And because why would you need it? I mean, you have voice activation on your mobile devices. Why would you need to carry this around? It's not that mobile. It's not tiny. I get why you have to press the button because people don't want to know that you're carrying a speaker around that can listen to you all the time. But I just couldn't understand why you'd need it. You still need Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And so that, to me, that's not
I don't see the market. Mobility. I think they're just making stuff to see what happens.
But I don't know. And then a lot of people email me and they say, I would use it in my office.
Okay.
I take it to work and then I can take it home.
Right.
And so I think that there are use cases for it, so I don't know. But I want something that is truly mobile. Did you see this week there's a Kickstarter for a watch that has the Amazon Voice service inside
interesting.
And it runs like an Android OS on, I think,
Amazon has opened it up. You can actually do it on a Raspberry Pi as well.
Yeah.
So Amazon has really opened it up so that anybody can build an Echo and use Amazon services. It makes sense because Amazon's going to make the money on you buying stuff from Amazon.
Exactly.
That's the real skill of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Here's a question from Jim. I'm currently using Amazon, another Amazon question, to back up all my music using Amazon Music and stream it. But I've gotten frustrated with their app for uploading. It crashes and fails too often. That was my experience, too. I would like to use iTunes Match to back up my collection and have it available for streaming, but I've heard too many problems with it on other Twit podcasts. Is it safe to use yet, or is it still screwed up? Jim, you're probably thinking of Jim Dalrymple's continual And that really wasn't so much a problem with Match by itself. Match by itself is fine. You pay $25 a year. You have to be an Apple user, right? And you have to be using iTunes. So it won't stream to an Android phone, but it will stream to an Apple phone. And what happens is it just sees everything in your iTunes library and matches it. One of the real advantages of it, you can use it to remove copy protection. If you bought stuff at the iTunes store a few years ago, remember they put copy protection in it. You just, what you do is you match all your music. It doesn't have to be from the iTunes store. It can be as low as 96 kilobits quality, low quality MP3, and it will match it. You delete the old stuff, or better yet, move it to an external hard drive so you haven't lost it. But get rid of it, and then re-download everything. It will all come back as 256 kilobit AAC, higher quality, no copy protection. I love iTunes Match. I highly recommend it. Having said that, I do use Amazon because I use Android devices too. And, you know, if you just keep starting it, and eventually, it might take a month, but eventually all your music will be on Amazon. Works really nicely with the Echo, right? Mm-hmm. It'll play music out of my Amazon library on the Echo anytime I want. Can't do that with iTunes.
Yeah, that was the greatest thing. I just bought Let's Go Crazy by Prince with my voice in the living room.
Right.
69 cents.
Yeah.
And the death of Prince is also a good reminder to back up your own music library. Like, I tend to think that the music that I listen to is pretty generic. It's going to be on all the streaming services. So why? I just can get rid of that and just, you know, I'll subscribe to the streaming services. But it's not. I mean, they're.
So when I asked my Echo to play Prince music, it played it from my collection because I had it, because it didn't have access to it from any other source. Another company that does this is Google. You also can do a certain amount for free, but you're going to end up paying if you have more than, say, I think it's 25,000 songs. I use Amazon, Google, and iTunes Match because I don't want to lose any of my music, and I want it to be everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so now if I use Google Play Music, I can listen. If I use an iTunes device, I can listen. On my iPhone, when I get a new iPhone, I just log in to my music, and there's everything I ever matched, right? And it's a lot. And I download what I want. I actually have some playlists. It'll remember. It'll know my playlist. So I say, give me all the classical music. That's what I like to listen to it on an airplane. That's why I want it local. I think we're in actually a magical age for people who love to listen to music. We have great devices everywhere. And our whole collection is available with Spotify and Google Music and Apple Music. There's many ways to get music. And if it's Prince or the few holdouts who still aren't on streaming music, buy it. Put it on Match, and then you have access to it. So, no, Jim, it isn't screwed up. The issue that Jim Dalrymple had, was very specific to him using Apple Music plus iTunes Match. And there was still some confusion about, well, what happens if... And his problem is it was deleting songs, matching the wrong song. Until you're sure it's worked, you shouldn't delete your music. That's why I say move it to an external drive. And make sure that the matched music is the matched music you want. And Jim Dalrymple had, you know, he had live tracks and he had studio tracks and he wanted both of them. And it was things that were specific to his somewhat unusual needs. I think iTunes Match works great.
Yeah, and Apple talked to him about it too. And, you know, I think they have fixed some of those problems.
They have fixed a lot of it. Yeah. None of it was user error, but maybe user expectations. Mm-hmm. That didn't quite match what Apple was doing.
Well, yeah, Jim, who wrote this question, also named Jim, I totally agree with a lot of those. Amazon's cloud services are great, but same with the photo uploading. Like, you can upload all your photos for free, but it'll take you a while. Like, it's not as easy as Google Photos or iCloud, but it's free.
I use them all.
Mm-hmm, you should.
If you're a Prime member, it's free unlimited uploading. Why not, you know?
I know. We are cloud hoarders.
I'll tell you why not. Because if you're paying for bandwidth on your smartphone and you upload everything image you take four or five times,
well, with Google you can set it to only do it on Wi-Fi.
That's what
probably
I would
Amazon
suggest.
Lets you do that too.
Yeah,
I would guess.
Hey, we went lickety split here. Thank you so much.
A lot of just fun. We always talk about iOS on Mondays, but it's fun to just talk about all the other stuff too.
Well, I was really glad we could bring back something we did install Linux. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you noticed, there were six or seven USB keys, a variety of different operating systems, not just Linux, but FreeBSD as well. And it's really nice nowadays. You can download these free operating systems, put them on most hardware, and get like a whole new machine. And you don't have to use Windows, which, you know, for some people, that's a benefit.
Mm-hmm.
We're done.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for being here.
You guys go home.
Yeah. No, don't go home yet. Okay. The Giz Fizz is coming up. But I do want to remind you, we do this show on Saturday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, 2200 UTC. If you want to watch live, I would love it if you do, because you can be in the chat room at irc.twit.tv, and we love having your support. But you can always watch after the fact. All of our shows are on our website. In this case, it's twit.tv/NSS. You can also find it on, you know, all the podcasting applications. Just download it. Subscribe in one of the Twit apps. There's Twit apps for every platform, including Roku, Apple TV, five of them, iOS, Android, Windows Phone. We didn't write any of them. Those are all from our fans. But thank you, fans, for writing them, and thank you for subscribing. Remember, next week, Martin Sargent, and in 2 weeks, our anniversary episode, 18th anniversary of Tech TV, the one-year anniversary of the new Screensavers, and Kate Botello will be in studio with us. It'll be, you'll have to come by and say hi.
All the
Tech TV folks, come say hi to Kate. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye.